The Trend Reporter is a production of iHeartRadio.
I'm journalist and beauty obsessive, Mara Schiavocampo. Trends are constantly changing. There's something new in beauty and wellness every day. That can be a lot to keep up with. So let me do the work for you. I'm here to tell you everything you want to know about the trends you should know. Today on The Trend Reporter, your burnout recovery recipe. Burnout whisperer Irena Sargent on how to know just what stage of burnout you may be in.
Complete mental, physical, and emotional exhaustion.
And exactly what you need to get your mojo back.
Put a hooky day on your calendar every quarter.
Plus, special tips for anyone working from home.
You have to lighten your load.
Everything you want to know about the wellness and beauty trends worth knowing. This is a really, really important episode for me because I am certainly burnt out. I am on empty. And right in this very moment, I feel completely drained and completely exhausted, which was why I was really looking forward to this interview, because I'm like, okay, this is one that I need for myself. I feel like a lot of people are talking about burnout now because clearly the last year and a half, 2 years have been tremendously difficult on a mass scale. It's kind of this communal exhaustion. But this is something that you've been focused on and talking about for a while, right?
Absolutely. So this part of my journey started 4 years ago. Started with me crying at the island in my kitchen. And then as I started in this exploration of trying to understand truly what was going on for me, because my typical solution was to work harder. And when that no longer was working, I recognized something had to change. And so I started to explore the space first via mental health, getting a therapist, understanding that process, and also recognizing the flaws and friction in the system of support. Then I also started to dabble into general wellness and the self-care. And as a woman who loves a good massage, as well as a yoga class, understanding that that wasn't having the impact as well. So that's why I had to continue to go deeper, continue to do my research and really understand and explore this world of burnout, what it is, what it isn't, and what we can actually do about it.
So let's talk about what it is. So I mentioned that I am certain I am suffering from burnout. And the reason that I am certain of that is because I started to take 2 weeks off this summer. Now, I generally don't take 2 weeks off at a time ever. That's very, very rare. I've done it a few times. I did it for my honeymoon. You know, if there's like a big family event, I might do it for that. But 2 weeks is extremely rare. Mm-hmm. And 2 weeks turned into 6 weeks. And the reason 2 weeks turned into 6 weeks is because every time I even thought about doing work, I would feel nauseous and drained and listless and just, I could not do it. Now, I'm lucky enough to be in a position where I'm my own boss. And so I dictate my production schedule. So I knew that I was backing myself up because I had things to do. Mm-hmm. So I knew I was screwing myself up for the future. So future Mara was getting screwed because then she was going to get this mountain of work later. But right now, Mara couldn't muster the energy for it. So I took 6 weeks off. I did absolutely nothing. Now that was another sign to me that something was really wrong because I love to work. Mm-hmm. So in every other circumstance where I've taken time off, I've been like chomping at the big bit to get back. And I'm still kind of doing side work, you know, sneaking away to like send an email or maybe making a note to myself about something I want to work on. And in this case, it was a complete and total opposite. I did not even want to think about work. And those were two huge signs for me that this was unusual. It was so unusual for me. How do people know if they're suffering from burnout and how can they distinguish it from something else?
So by definition, burnout is all about, it's the result of untreated chronic stress that can result in complete mental, physical, and emotional exhaustion.
Okay, wait. So I want to pause. Untreated chronic stress that can result in what?
Complete mental, physical, and emotional exhaustion.
Okay, so the initial issue is the untreated and chronic stress.
Ah, look at you getting to the point. You are absolutely right. So what is happening now and in the conditions that we are is that we don't have, culture does not have its typical outlets and ways to manage stress, ways to manage pressure. Things as simple as your basic routines and behaviors of driving to work and using that, driving to and from work and using that as a decompression ritual, or going to your workout class, or going out and connecting with friends, or even going on vacation. Those did more than you thought at face value. Those were ways that we manage stress of our everyday lives. And for those who are in high performance or high pressure environments, you need those outlets. And so right now, or over the past 2 years, those things have been eliminated. And so things have been bottling up. And yes, these things have existed, but we've had ways to manage it. And so that is why we're seeing this growth and this crisis, actually. Burnout was coined in the 1970s. And in 2019, the WHO actually identified it as an occupational phenomenon in 2019. And the study by Deloitte, there were 77% of professionals in the study reported burnout. So this is not new. It's far from it. It's just the conditions have ripened to put us in the situation where universally we're dealing with it. And so when it comes to how do you recognize it, I am not one for toxic positivity. I'm very much about what is going on in the world. At any point in time, you are somewhere on the burnout cycle. It does not look the same for every individual. There are actually multiple stages and phases of burnout. So even if you're in the early stage, there's a matter of ongoing maintenance and management and doing those things to help you feel better. But once you start to bottle things up and you're in the more escalated or advanced stages, that's where you're starting to see the things like physical reactions to work, not having any energy to continue to move forward.
So you could be in any one of different stages?
Yes. So burnout is really like a cycle. And there, depending upon which piece of research you look at, there are up to 12 stages. There are multiple phases. I break it down to 3 major warning flags to help you understand how you are progressing. The first stage, early warning sign, is all about chronic exhaustion. This is not tired. This is not sleepy. This is nothing. No amount of sleep is starting to fulfill me. It doesn't matter if I go to bed earlier and half the time you can't go to sleep. It's a chronic exhaustion that makes you feel like you're dragging. That is a sign that something is off. Sleep is foundational. If you talk to any mental health practitioner or any wellness guide, if your sleep is off, that creates this domino effect that is a warning flag that something is awry. So chronic exhaustion is one of the first things to pay attention to. The next phase warning flag is all about withdrawal. So in this next phase, this is where you start to disconnect from those things and those people around you. Those things that used to bring you joy are no longer fulfilling it. You can also see an increase in cynicism in this space, especially in workplaces. Everyone around you is quote unquote stupid or can't do their job. If that's not how you normally behave.
What if you do work with a bunch of incompetent idiots, though?
Well, that happens in times. But if it is a change, if you notice you are that person that's like, oh my God, just let me do it. Just let me do it. Just give it to me. And that just adds onto the pressure, into the stress. If you find yourself doubling down on what are more negative coping mechanisms, this is where alcohol increase starts to take up. This is where cannabis starts to take up. Those things that used to be somewhat soothing, you're noticing you're partaking more often. Those are what are in the space of negative coping mechanisms, which is very common in this space. Also within withdrawal, pay attention to close friends and family. And if they're calling you out in the sense of, hey, you don't seem like yourself, you're starting to feel a little off. Instead of looking at it from a matter of defensive, which often can be a natural reaction, those are signs to take a step back and pay attention to how you're acting. And if it is different and something you need to recognize. So that's withdrawal and pulling away from those things that matter and help. And then the last flag is detachment. That goes into a space of feeling like everything is for naught. It's all a waste of time. What is the point? And this is where it really becomes a slippery slope, because this is where it can rapidly escalate into true and official mental health and physical conditions. So depression starts to play in here. There is a difference between acute depression and chronic depression. Acute depression and the basics of it is where you can still find joy in other parts of life versus a more chronic depression is where nothing fulfills you. Either one of those, a mental health practitioner can be of support. Anxiety starts to increase through all stages of burnout. You start to change your regular well-being habits, sleeping, eating, any type of connection. So you really start to shut down and feel like everything is a waste in that last stage. And the thing about it is, wherever you are and whatever you experience, one, you are far from alone. Once again, this has existed from the beginning of time. It's human nature. And especially in these conditions of hustle culture, we work ourselves into the ground. And then two, it is reversible. all of this is reversible. And so I'm sure we will get into what you can actually do about it. But those three warning flags: one, chronic exhaustion; two, withdrawal; and then three, detachment.
Well, I feel seen and exposed at the same time because you have just completely described the progression and everything that I went through. I started abusing alcohol really. I wasn't getting drunk, but I was drinking every day. I have recently stopped drinking entirely because I need a break and I need to reassess what I want for my life, just in terms of the habits that I partake in. Do I want to be somebody who drinks gin every single day? I don't. So how am I going to change that about my life? And also the cynicism, the nothing matters. Why am I doing this? What's the point? So this is very, very much something that I am trying to work my way through right now. And again, I'm someone who has always loved my work, but I've also always bought into, and I think a lot of people have this, what I believe now to be a lie of like, no days off, I'll sleep when I'm dead, hustle hard, you know, the early bird gets the worm, where it's a badge of honor to declare that you work 24/7. Mm-hmm. You feel like that's changing culturally, where people are starting to see that for the bullshit that it is?
Absolutely. And I appreciate you called it the bullshit that it is. We have all been fed that one. I am originally from Detroit. And so hustling, grinding, it's in my DNA. It is in my blood. And so I grew up in a very blue collar household where my parents just worked and they worked and they worked. And it was a matter of just work hard. The recognition will come, just to provide for your family. And so I was conditioned like that from an early age. I had three jobs in high school. I had three jobs in college. When I got a full-time job, I was like, let's get a side job. And also let's throw on some volunteerism in a nonprofit. It was always a matter of how much can I do? How much can I add on and how many balls can I juggle? And it fulfills me. And working fulfills me to this day. But it becomes a matter of realizing there are some things. There is a difference between what you should do and what you want to do. And so you can want to work. You can want to grind. Nothing's wrong with that as long as you, one, are choosing it, and two, you're taking care of yourself along the way. It's the fact of feeling as though you have no choice and this is all that you have to do in order to be a high achiever, in order to show that you're committed. That is a dangerous path to go down. And what I'm excited about in the fact that there's all this conversation now is that organizations are no longer able to point the finger and say, oh, this is purely an individual issue. That has been how the market has responded. One, it's an individual issue. Two, as an individual, we feel the shame and pull away. Most people
It's a weakness. It's like you couldn't cut it.
Absolutely. You couldn't hack it. Absolutely. Like something's wrong with you. But burnout, how I like to break it down, it is a combination of mindset, well-being behaviors, and situation. So there are studies that show within a workplace, there are six major drivers of burnout within a workplace. Now, that doesn't mean that your job is the only thing causing it or will absolutely cause it, but it definitely contributes. So things as basic as workload, control or perception of control, reward, community, fairness, and values, those things add up, especially if they're at a deficit, and especially for women and people of color. And put it together for both of us as Black women, if you're dealing with microaggressions every day, if you're dealing with things that highlight the lack of fairness or the lack of reward or the lack of control every single day, and you're so used to pushing against it and carrying a heavier load, that adds up. And so it's a matter, burnout is very real, and it's time that we get over the shame and the stigma, because it happens to most, if not all. And it actually happens, it is a condition of overworking and overcommitment, not being weak or lazy. It is the exact opposite. So those high achievers are the most susceptible to burnout.
So let's talk about solutions. I do feel like the best thing about this time has been that we can decline things and we can be honest about why we're declining them. And there's like no judgment. Like when somebody says, I just can't right now, I don't have it in me, thank you, but no thank you. Like we all understand. Like even I've gotten people's email replies. They set up an automatic reply that says like, please don't expect a prompt response. Like we are all
I'm here
just
for it.
Keeping it real, right? So I'm here for all of that. So that's probably the best thing that's come out of that, is that we can be a little bit more honest about our capabilities and our limitations. So what is the strategy for managing this? Because everybody can't take 6 weeks off. Mm-hmm. I'm very sympathetic to that. I could have taken another 20 weeks off and still probably not felt ready. Everybody doesn't have the time to take off or to leave their job and go backpacking or camping or whatever may reset them. So what are the strategies that anybody can put into place?
Absolutely. I like to joke, everybody doesn't have Bali money.
Or Tulum money.
Exactly. Because that's what you would think is a solution, but those people come back burned out still. So when it comes to what can you actually do? So the first thing is to take more preventative actions. And we discount wellness. I grew up in a very Black Midwest household where it was not talking about yoga, therapy. That was not our conversation.
But those, Jesus will fix it.
Have you been talking to my mother?
Just pray on it. Have you prayed on it?
Yes, pray on it. I did pray on it. And then he told me to go to therapy. So the pillars of mental wellness really do help. They especially help from a prevention standpoint and giving you outlets and ways to process emotions. So a quick overview, there are four key pillars. Mental wellness, I like it because it's so diverse. The first one is growth. The growth pillar is all about brain and really helping with brain development and management. So that's where therapy falls in, coaching falls in, diet and nutrition fall into that space. So paying attention to those elements, having space and having community and support to help with brain development, to think through those deep things that are going on inside, that is extremely helpful. Not just once you recognize there's a problem, but before it. It is an ongoing thing. You have a brain, you have wellness, you have well-being every single day of your life. The next pillar is all about rest in the most literal sense, as well as others. So getting sleep, as we already said, foundation is super important, but also those sensorial wellness spaces like aromatherapy, sound baths, those things help your brain breathe. It sounds simple and it's like, oh, that seems like a waste of time. But the first time I actually had a sound bath, I was like, oh, I feel so relaxed. I don't know what's happening. My brain actually stops for a second. So those things have purpose. Play is another important pillar. Play is all about creativity, sparking your brain to think in different ways, getting an outlet, bringing in laughter, which has been proven to reduce elements of stress, anxiety, and depression. So playing or any type of creative outlet, those really help as well. And then last is community. So all about connection. So in the literal sense, friends, family, getting into nature, volunteering, that also helps you connect not only to yourself, but others, as well as sometimes even a greater purpose. So the four pillars of mental wellness can be used as preventative measures, as well as all throughout the burnout cycle. If you're finding yourself further into the burnout cycle or the more severe or intense stages, I highly, 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 highly recommend therapy and introspection. So a lot of journaling, writing down your feelings and allowing yourself to feel, that's going to be the thing that breaks through, because self-awareness is the foundation of beating and breaking your burnout cycle.
And what about scaling back on, if it's not possible to scale back on your work, is it wise to try to scale back other commitments or to stop maybe activities or volunteers, or to, if you can afford more help, to bring other people in to offset some of your responsibilities? I mean, is there a way to practically lighten your load?
You're absolutely right. You have to lighten your load. If you are really dealing with burnout, you have to. You can't do it all the time. That is what I like to say. You can do it all sometimes, but not all the time. So one, if anything is optional, cut it. Stop raising your hand for stuff and don't feel bad about it. You're choosing you. You are putting you in that space. So that can be hard to decondition for those doing the most. So what I like to say is actually put time on your calendar. For me, if it's on my calendar, it actually happens. So block out time for yourself on your calendar weeks and months in advance. Just block it. You'll figure out what to do with it later. For me, I really focus on hookie days. I'm like, put a hookie day on your calendar every quarter. You'll figure out what you do with it, but block it so you don't have an excuse not to take it.
So that's what, just a day during the week where you do whatever you want to do?
I'm all about a day during the week. So it's all about using your time for you. I like Tuesdays because Tuesdays are the most normal day of the week. and so at least quarterly, just block a day out. you know what your schedule is, you have an idea of what's going on in the workplace, things will always happen. Things will always add up. Work will always be there. But if you continue to deprioritize yourself, you're not going to be able to handle it. And especially in the way that you want to. So I'm all about Hookie Days. Annual celebration of Hookie Day is the third Tuesdays in October for Hookie. And it is a professional skip day for mental health. So you block your calendar and then you fill it with whatever you need. So connection, community, sleeping in, sitting on your couch, volunteering. It's all about choosing what you want to do on that day and to recognize and own your time. Because it is that deconditioning that we have to do. Sometimes it's being a little rebellious and breaking those habits. You can start to make change. And if you're hesitant, I had to find my way into it. My therapist put me on timeout. That's how I started. She was literally like, this is not what we're here for. You're supposed to be on leave. Please put the laptop down. So putting a time on your calendar is huge. Asking for support. So within the workplace or even at home, if you can reallocate the way that responsibilities are held or who holds what, that is super helpful. So looking at assessing, one, is this a necessity at this time? What does success look like? And is that really success or are you doing the most? So the 80-20 rule is super important. So sometimes you don't have to do the most. What is important to actually get achieved at this time and who else can help you do it? So that applies at home as well in the workplace. So splitting responsibilities, splitting chores, bringing in some help. If you have the ability to bring in contract help in the workplace and bring in contractors, people are looking for jobs. So there's an opportunity to give back and help yourself as well, or even push some things out. So looking at real dates and just being very, very clear on what is necessary to get done versus doing the extra. This is not a season for extra.
This is not the season for extra. That is for sure. What about if you're working from home? It can be really hard to set those boundaries where everything is blurred. It's like, mm-hmm. It's almost like you're living in the office. You're working from home, but you're also living in your office and your children are your coworkers and children are terrible coworkers, almost as awful as spouses. So how do you handle that, that craziness that we're all in?
Absolutely. So some simple tips on that is one, to have a set work day and a set workplace. So depending upon how big your space is, there are still ways you can rope off or allocate. So for me, an example, I try to work in my office. I try to stop bringing my laptop everywhere else in the house. Especially, do not take your work into your bedroom. That is your one place of reprieve in your house. If nothing else, keep it out of there. But if you can stay in your office or if you work at at your kitchen table, what are your hours of work? You start at 8, you stop at 5:30, stop. And shut it down and turn it into a dinner table or what it's actually supposed to use for. I've heard some wonderful ideas of actually changing your clothes. So getting dressed for the day and then at the end of your quote unquote work day, changing and dressing down so that it flips something in your mind like this is different. I've even heard people as extreme as leaving their house so that they can come back and start the second part of their day. So little things like that are ways to trick your mind that something is different. You need to shut off and you need to shut down. One other thing that you can do is to find something that brings you joy and gets you out of the house. So picking up those old hobbies and habits that you used to do, that is a way, especially for those who are not used to slowing down, that have to do something, fill that time with something that brings you joy. I like to say, fill your free time with freedom. So if you used to play a sport, pick up a lesson. If you want to get into something creative, go pick up a hobby, go take a class, go learn how to do pottery or go learn art class. Those things not only will help you start to decompress because active meditation helps, but it also helps with the creativity and helps your brain fire in different ways. So if you've been stuck on a big project and you can't figure it out, no matter how many hours you commit to it, doing something else actually helps in so many ways. So finding something to commit to outside of work actually helps. And especially for those who just have to do something, it's a nice trick of the mind.
I love all this. I'm going to take your advice. I'm going to spend the night tonight actually catching up on 90 Day Fiancé under the covers. Thank you so much for your time. Where can people learn more about you and the work that you're doing?
Thank you for having me on. So I'm personally on Instagram. I'm the Burnout Whisperer. So send me any questions that you have and I will point you to different resources, tools, and come up with some creative problem solving for what we're dealing with day to day. And then my company, Hooky Wellness, it is literally like play hooky. So at Hooky Wellness on Instagram and on the website, hookywellness.com, to learn more about workplace burnout relief. So and support for teams, training, workshops to really help this collective, get this collective relief that we need.
Looking for a product mentioned on the Trend Reporter? Check out our Amazon page to shop the show. Also, check out my Instagram and YouTube for more beauty and wellness coverage, including tutorials, fun photos, some reels, and much more. Links in the show notes. The Trend Reporter is a production of iHeartRadio. For more shows from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.